This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's very good to welcome back to the program one of Michigan's own, Senator Debbie Stabenow, who among many other responsibilities in the Senate serves as the chairwoman of the Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry. Senator, great to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to be back.
Let's get right to it. There are a lot of places we can start, and I want to move into the Farm Bill a little bit later on. But let's talk about a new initiative that links manufacturing and agriculture, and I think you call it Grow It Here, Make It Here.
Well, first of all, Cook, I don't think we have a middle class unless we make things and grow things. And that's what we do in Michigan. We make things and grow things, and the effort that I'm involved in right now is how do we bring those two things together. There's something called bio-based manufacturing that's doing that now, and I intend to include provisions in that to be able to help support it in the Farm Bill. And what that means is we're looking for ways to replace chemicals and petroleum and plastics with agricultural byproducts. We all know about biofuels, and that's one piece of that, and actually advanced biofuels are really taking off. In addition to corn-based ethanol, there's a lot of other opportunities for us to use byproducts from algae to switch grasses to wheat or corn stalks and so on. But there's another way in which we can get off of foreign oil, and that's using agricultural products, soybeans, soy oil, wheat or corn byproducts, husks and so on, biomass, wood byproducts, other things to get us off of foreign oil and use biodegradable materials in plastics. Example, if you drive a Ford vehicle, if you have a great new Chevy Volt, a number of our different automobiles, you're actually sitting on soybeans in the seats. It's soy-based foam used for the seat cushions. Lear's doing this now. So it's soy-based. It's biodegradable. You can actually take it out and it'll degrade over 60 days in the backyard or no need, you know, for a landfill. It's more fuel efficient. It's lightweight. And I always tease that, you know, if you get hungry, you got something to munch on. So it's, you know, but that's soy-based. We're using soy oil in plastics for the cup holders, or there's corn stalk or wheat stalk byproducts being used in other plastics in automobiles. Lubricants, again, soy oil can replace oil for chainsaw lubricant or, you know, other kinds of oils that are needed, that are worked with machinery and so on. So that's really what it's about. It's creating a great new opportunity for us. We've got over 90 companies in Michigan that are doing this now all across the state, and it's an opportunity to do something that involves another market for our farmers, and it's better for the environment. It's lightweight. It is more efficient, and can create an opportunity for us to build on what we do, which is make things and grow things.
My guest is Senator Debbie Stabenow. Let's move into some. You mentioned it. Let's move into it. Clean energy, something that you have long been a champion of, and as the co-chair of the Senate Manufacturing Caucus, you've authored some legislation that's going to encourage the further production of renewable energy.
This is about looking to the future. It's about giving us choices at the pump. Right now, we're pretty much held hostage to whatever the oil companies want to charge, and we know there's volatility in the world economy and so on, but we also know that, hey, with Memorial Day, prices are going to go up. Summer, prices are going to go up. It's just whatever the market will bear, and so we've got to have better choices, whether it's advanced biofuels, whether it's natural gas at the pump, whether it's being able to use wind or solar or geothermal or the Chevy Volt. And the best way to say no to the oil companies is to get a car that's an electric car or you know, or a hybrid. So what I've been promoting is that we extend what have been temporary tax cuts for these new industries and that we make them long-term. The oil companies have had long-term tax benefits and subsidies since 1916. The first one was 1916. And so they've been given tremendous subsidies for a long, long time. And they're now at a point where the top five oil companies are the most profitable in the world. They are making about $260,000 a minute in profits, more than the average person in Michigan makes in a year. They don't need taxpayer money. They shouldn't be getting taxpayer money. So what I'd like to do is end those taxpayer subsidies and instead invest in new opportunities to compete with oil that will create jobs for us and give us more choices at the pump and get us off of foreign oil. And we should be doing that. It makes no sense to be giving these subsidies to the top five oil companies. And so the proposal I've had, we've had two different votes on it in the Senate. The last one actually got a majority of 51 last week. Unfortunately, it was being filibustered by the Republicans in the Senate, so we needed 60 votes to stop a filibuster. So we had a majority, but not enough to stop a filibuster. So we're going to keep at it, and I really believe we've got to have an energy policy in this country that's the future, and that is advanced batteries, wind, solar, natural gas, things that are going to get us off of foreign oil.
Getting a comprehensive national policy has not been particularly easy. Do you see some hope for that down the trail?
I do. I think that we're going to get there because we have to get there. It's about getting us off of foreign oil, and it's also about jobs. You know, it's interesting that today we're actually producing more oil in America, and at the same time we're using less. We're using less foreign oil because of the beginning of things like electric vehicles and so on. But there's so much more we can do. And I see everything through the prism of jobs and making things. You know, there's 8,000 parts in a big wind turbine. We've got a wind turbine farm in the Thumb area. We've got other wind turbines that are around the state now. When I look at those, I know it's energy. I know it is about giving us clean energy to get off of foreign oil. I see 8,000 parts, and that's manufacturing. Same thing with solar. We've got folks over around the Bay City Midland area now forming a real cluster around solar. That's jobs. That's small businesses that are creating new opportunities. So we have got to move in that direction. It's not about the past anymore. It's not about being dependent on oil, which frankly directs so much of our national security policy and so on. We need to be getting off of foreign oil, and we need to be doing everything that we can to be able to create a energy policy for the future.
Put your visionary hat on, maybe 10 to 15 years down the road, maybe longer. What will the energy portfolio in the United States look like if all of your best wishes come to pass?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to do everything. We certainly are going to have domestic oil, and I think we ought to be doing that here at home in America and keeping it here as best we can. I think it means more natural gas. It means trucks and large vehicles, particularly on natural gas, which is much cleaner. It means more electric vehicles, and, you know, we have a chance in Michigan to really own the advanced battery industry. Right now, at 2009, we were making 2% of the world's batteries in America with a public-private effort we've had going on of investing in batteries. We're going to be able to make 40% of the world's batteries in the next 2 to 3 years. And so owning that, Michigan can own that advanced battery industry. And there's a new National Battery Innovation Center that I authored the development of, and there's a competition going on now, and I'm really hopeful that's going to end up in Michigan. So wind, solar opportunities, I mean, I think what we need is to create a set of tax policies, cuts that don't pick between oil and other options, that, you know, that put in place the ability for any of the new technologies to have the same kinds of opportunities that oil has had for almost 100 years, and that we need to unleash the great innovation of Michigan. I mean, we're right now number one in clean energy patents for the entire country. the ideas are coming from Michigan, coming from our folks, you know, small businesses as well as large. And if we can just support that and unleash that, we can create a great economy and many, many more jobs.
Let's, if we could, turn from clean energy to clean water, another thing that you've been very passionate about. But just recently, you announced an initiative for the Western Lake Erie Basin, which is going to boost conservation efforts among agricultural producers with the long-term goal of keeping that Western Lake Erie Basin pristine for hunting and fishing and recreation.
Our biggest challenge right now on water quality is really in Lake Erie. And as chair of the Agriculture Committee, I've put a lot of focus on a Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, a conservation initiative all around Michigan, frankly. But the Lake Erie Initiative will bring $2 million from the USDA to partner with farmers. That partners, farmers pay part of the cost for conservation. The FDA or the USDA would pay part of that. That would allow them to put in place things that stop runoff, you know, phosphorus fertilizer runoff into the water, other what they call buffer strips or ways of managing the land that will stop erosion and chemicals going into the water and so on, and would really partner with our farmers who are the stewards of the land. No one has more of a stake in protecting our land than our farmers, but we're going to be supporting them and giving them more tools to be able to do what they know how to do and want to do, which is to create some better management of the land and water runoff and so on into the water. And it will be a big part of cleaning up Lake Erie. Get that, you know, blue-green stuff that you see floating on the water, get it out of there.
Well, you mentioned agriculture, and you mentioned farmers being, I like to say, the original green industry. We're exactly on the same page there. Let's talk for a moment about the Farm Bill. You had it pretty well put in place. You and Senator Roberts worked very closely together when the Super Committee was doing its deliberations on the budget. When all that broke down, you still had a lot of pieces in place. Now going forward, are you as confident that you can get a Farm Bill done this year, or are you going to run into some problems?
Well, I'm confident we can get a good Farm Bill through the Senate. We have strong bipartisan support. As you mentioned, back in the fall when the Deficit Reduction Committee asked each committee to come up with cuts that would reduce the deficit, we were the only committee. The House and Senate Ag Committees were the only ones that actually came together and proposed $23 billion in cuts within the confines of a restructured Farm Bill policy. And that, so we ended up putting together a policy that reforms payments, no longer paying a government payment to farmers if they don't have a loss. We want to only structure the Farm Bill around planted acres for any kind of support, and number of changes that we made is strengthening, consolidating conservation programs and so on. So we put together a great proposal. Unfortunately, we were the only committee that did that, and the larger project fell apart. So we're back going through the normal process. We will have a bill, I believe, by June through the Senate. The real challenge for the Ag Committee, and I'm working closely with them in the House, is that this budget that the House passed makes much larger cuts in conservation, in support for farmers and crop insurance and nutrition and so on, that will make it extremely difficult to write a Farm Bill. So we're hoping they'll take the work that we do when it comes to the House and be able to work within the structure, you know, that we give them, because we really have a strong bipartisan effort going on.
Senator, I have one last question I need to ask. And all of these things that we've talked about, from clean waters and clean energy and supporting agriculture, hard to argue with these initiatives. But Kath and I just welcomed our first grandbaby into the world on St. Patrick's Day. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And we are worried, of course, about the federal debt and how we're going to get that down so that people like Art Lee, when their generation comes of age, won't have to deal with it.
I couldn't agree with you more that it's our job and responsibility to make the tough decisions, the right decisions, so that we leave them a world without this big debt, and frankly, one that protects our water and our land and has a good economy and all those things we want. So we're going to do our part. I mean, we are the only committee at this moment that is proposing deficit reduction within what we're responsible for. Our farm bill will have $23 billion in cuts, not because somebody told us we had to, but because we believe it's the right thing to do. And I'm hopeful that other committees will be doing the same thing.
Well, Senator, we could talk all day about some of these initiatives. As always, it's a pleasure having a chance to visit, and I wish you all the best going forward, especially with the Farm Bill.
Great. Thanks. Good to be with you.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com. And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the Michigan State University Alumni Association. And if you're the parent of a Spartan, there's no better gift you can give than a lifetime membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. Joining the MSUAA family opens the doors to our network of over 500,000 Spartans who'll help you feel right at home wherever you go, who can help connect you with Spartans on the inside, who can help you grow in your career. People who give you special treatment just because you're a Spartan. And an investment in a life membership in the MSU Alumni Association doesn't just add value to your Spartan life. It helps Spartans everywhere build more competitive skill sets and move more quickly in the direction of their dreams. Learn more about an MSUAA life membership online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The Michigan State University Alumni Association. Your personal network for life.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
Well, the University Research Corridor is a collaboration among Michigan State University, University of Michigan, and Wayne State.
That's Michigan State University President Luana Simon.
People of Michigan have made an extraordinary investment in us, but no institution can do everything. And we need to use our visibility and our cachet to advance the state of Michigan and its people. And the URC is a vehicle to do that.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
It's not that it's the only game in town, but it is a game in town that brings, we hope, a spotlight to Michigan and also tells the people of Michigan that we are committed to using the investment they've made in us to try to move the state forward.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to Greening of the Great Lakes Jennifer Battle, who is the Assistant Director of Campus Sustainability at the very green Michigan State University. Jennifer, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Kirk. It's good to be here.
Well, the big news on campus in Be Spartan Green lately is the Energy Transition Plan, which has been released. A 24-member group of MSU faculty, staff, and students helped put this thing together. I know you've read every word of it. What are some of the highlights of the Energy Transition Plan, and where is MSU going with it?
Well, really the highlight, we were asked to come up with a long-range strategic energy plan, something that will help guide the decisions of MSU. And what our committee decided is that the long-range vision for the university should be to move towards renewable energy sources. And so the plan states that that should be our vision and then begins in a timetable to start outlining goals and targets that we should do to get to move toward that vision. One of the important things that we've talked about in the plan is the vision for Michigan State University to move toward renewable energy. And we're looking at that. We have three goals in the plans. One, to improve the physical environment. And those are those physical targets that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and increase renewable energy. But the other two parts of that are equally as important in achieving that goal. And one is to continue to develop sustainable energy research. And then the third is to really tap into our world grant, land grant mission and share and collaborate with partners and share what we're doing in this energy transition process. So all three of those are really going to help us achieve our goal. Most people are paying a lot of attention to our greenhouse reduction table and our renewable energy targets. Right now, our planning timeline goes out to 2030, but it's important to remember this is a living plan. Every 5 years, we're going to extend that planning timeline. We're going to have a complete review of energy technologies and assumptions and goals. And as we can get more aggressive, which we want to, we're going to do so in moving towards that ultimate vision.
Well, in some ways, the goals are fairly aggressive. Right now, MSU is about 2% renewable energy, and by 2030, at least the current goal, is to ramp that up to 40%.
Absolutely. We feel that these goals are aggressive, but they're achievable too. So if we as Spartans work together, we partner with our people around the state, organizations, we tap into our excellent researchers on campus, we feel that we can achieve those goals. We've used an integrated energy planning model so that we are reasonably certain that these are goals that we can achieve with today's technology. So as we continue to develop technology, we might even become more aggressive with these.
You know, it was great that you had students on that energy transition committee. Mm-hmm. Students are sometimes a little impatient with longer timelines. They want things to happen right now. But sometimes students don't understand how much this costs to make these kinds of transitions.
Well, sure. I mean, and the student participation was excellent. And even there's been a lot of attention from some student organizations. But one of the things that I'm encouraged about is that students are very passionate about this issue. It's a very important issue for MSU and for our state. So, yes, there is impatience on behalf of the students sometimes, but I think that's also important to continue to push the university forward. These are very expensive endeavors, and we certainly had to balance what we called our five key variables: cost, capacity, reliability, environment, and health. And, you know, sometimes it's really difficult to understand. We can't completely exclude, go toward environmental goals while excluding cost. It just won't work out. It won't be a sustainable plan that way. So, but it has been great having the students on there. They have some really creative ideas, and in fact, we'll probably explore those ideas in the future and do some research towards that and to help us, again, advance the goals of our plan.
My guest is Jennifer Battle, who's the Assistant Director of Campus Sustainability at Michigan State University. President Simon is, and well, actually, you're going to moderate a panel coming up just next Wednesday, April the 18th, talking a little bit about energy, economic impact, and about the new energy transition plan. A little bit about that.
Yeah, we're very excited because not only with the energy transition plan is coming out, but there are a lot of key things that Michigan State's doing in energy right now. We've got our commitment to the Better Buildings Challenge, which is a Department of Energy initiative where we're pledging to reduce our energy use by 20% and 20 million square feet across campus. We also recently approved an anaerobic digester for South Campus, which will add renewable energy to our portfolio and power some of the South Campus buildings. And there are just a variety of things that we're doing in the area of energy, and we think it's important, again, to share what MSU's commitment is, what we're doing, and how businesses, organizations, alumni, how they can engage and partner with us. We feel that the things that we're doing are smart management of our energy, so it's going to help us manage our resources better, which always translates into better management of resources for families. And then also the impact that we're having around the state. The great thing is we've been able to partner with different companies and organizations. So not only are we reducing our environmental impact, but we're having an economic impact as well.
Well, this panel is going to be webcast on April the 18th from 1:45 p.m. to 2:30 p.m., I believe. Mm-hmm. And people can go to just energytransition.msu.edu and just follow the links probably.
Yes, to get to the webcast. And we're really excited about the event because people have the ability to submit questions in advance. So if there's something that you'd like to ask the panel, please submit that in advance. They can ask questions via Twitter during the event. They'll be able to view the event live on the webcast, and then we'll also record it for future viewing.
And that website, again, energytransition, all one word, .msu.edu. There's more, but if they just get to there, they can follow the links to the webcast. Okay. You mentioned, Jennifer, the anaerobic digester, something that we've featured, of technology we featured on this show several times. That's going to be on South Campus, and you're combining biosolids, food waste, and manure from the dairy farms. I mean, what a concept.
Well, you know, it's not the prettiest thing in the world, but it makes a lot of sense for Michigan State. We have our dining hall facilities on campus that produce food waste, and we want to figure out a sustainable way to use that. And with a digester group, they were doing several studies, and between food waste and manure and the other solids that they're using, they can produce a biogas that can be used for energy. So those are the types of sustainable energy and renewable energy solutions that we're really excited about in the future for MSU.
And here's another example, like so many that you've already discussed, and the Recycling Center, where Michigan State's been a leader in methane digester research. And now we combine the research with actually implementing this on campus. The students get involved, and you've got this holistic look at these technologies.
Yes, it's certainly the living learning laboratory concept, and that's certainly one of the things we'd like to continue to promote on campus. Our Vice President, Dr. Fred Poston, has been instrumental in providing funding and opportunities for students, faculty, and operations staff. In addition, we're always looking to collaborate externally, internally, and looking at grants and partnerships. So we hope that that serves as a model to continue to develop renewable energy on campus and other sustainable solutions.
Well, congratulations, Jennifer, on all these Be Spartan Green initiatives, on the energy transition plan, the anaerobic digester. There are other initiatives that maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss next time, but continued success.
All right. Thank you, Kirk.
I've been talking with Jennifer Battle, Assistant Director of Campus Sustainability at Michigan State University.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, we have a first-time guest to Greening of the Great Lakes. It's a pleasure to welcome Marcy Fitch, who serves as Director of Volunteer Services for the very well-known and highly regarded Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Marcy, very good to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
For our listeners, and there won't be many of them who aren't familiar with the mission, give us a snapshot of the goals and overall mission of Detroit Rescue Mission, now over 100 years old, I think.
Yes, the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries is 103 years old. It started with one shelter. So fast forward to 2012, we're now the largest hub of shelters in the nation. We provide food, shelter, and clothing, and many services to 1,500 men, women, and children each day. So it's grown a lot.
1,500 each day.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Our mission is to rebuild the inner city one life at a time by ministering to the total person, body, soul, and spirit. We help them become rehabilitated, employed, and living productive lives and restored families. So it's a pretty amazing nonprofit company, and I'm really privileged and honored to work there.
Well, in a previous interview that I watched, you said that after doing quite a few things after graduating from Michigan State University, mm-hmm. You got involved, and you said it's been a transformational thing for you personally to work for the mission.
You know what? It has. Unfortunately, I didn't get involved in volunteering until I was almost 40. It started, I was driving one day, and I heard Mitch Albom. I was flipping through radio channels, and he was talking about volunteering, and they needed some volunteers for their time to help. Well, I was nervous. You know, I didn't know anyone, but I really felt compelled to go, and I did, and a short while later, I was asked to be project coordinator for his events, which I still do since 2005, and that decision, you know, to take that step of faith and do something good for someone else has really absolutely changed the direction of my life in a very positive way.
Well, as Director of Volunteer Services, you're essentially asking people in Detroit and the surrounding area to come down and get involved and work on some of these programs that you're doing. When you talk to people, what are your main pitches, your selling points to get them involved? Maybe your own personal experience.
Mm-hmm. I tell a lot of the volunteers that the gift is in the giving. You know, come on down, take the time, and you will find something that you didn't expect. When you put a smile on another person's face and you touch their life, you received back just as much as you gave. And you know what? You're not only touching the lives of people that you help, but the volunteers' lives are touched as well. And I know that because I've experienced it personally.
You've experienced
Absolutely.
It personally.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries are involved in. Just recently, there was a pretty well-publicized story about a 100-year-old woman, I think,
yes.
that was facing eviction from her home.
Mm-hmm.
And you folks stepped in. And what's the outcome? Is it a good story?
It's a fantastic, beautiful, wonderful story, yes. In fact, that's where I've been the last couple of days. Texana Hollis is almost 102, and in September she was evicted from her home. It foreclosed. Mitch Albom had heard of the story, and we partner with him in a lot of our charities. In fact, him and our CEO, Dr. Adi, who's an amazing, fantastic leader. He has very innovative and unique ideas. He's a real visionary. And him and Mitch came up with this program called Working Homes, Working Families. Well, Mitch approached Dr. Adi about helping Texana, and it took us, what, is it going on 7 months in September? They bought the home back. It was refurbished. In the last couple of days, we put the last finishing touches on it. It's not like Extreme Makeover Home Edition when you refurbish a house. You can't go to Sears and buy everything new. So for me, it was fun to go to our warehouse, you know, and pick out new items or donated items. And then we went with Texana's son yesterday to her storage unit, and he helped us pick out some personal items that we could put in the home, back in the home as well. And so yesterday, Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries and Mitch Albom's charity, Say Detroit, and a village of volunteers and community got together, and we handed Texana her keys. And I must say that the home turned out absolutely beautiful, but it took a lot of people. It took a village, you know, to change a person's life. But it brought the community together.
And what it must have meant to this woman who, at almost 102 years of age, facing an eviction, that's unimaginable.
It was a transformation. I had watched, you know, the original story and just how heartbroken she was, you know, and it brought you to tears. And it brought her to tears yesterday as well, but she had a smile on her face. You know, she had everybody crying.
And good tears.
Yeah, she's a beautiful, sharp lady, and it's just been a blessing, you know, to be part of that.
My guest is Marcy Fitch, who is the Director of Volunteer Services for Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Marcy, you mentioned earlier that you're servicing about 1,400 people a day or so. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other programs that you're doing. I mean, what are some of the highlights of some of the programs that you provide?
Well, we have a lot of programs. Our goal with individuals in all of our programs is to put them back into the community as viable citizens by providing job placement, permanent housing, and connecting them with their family again. You know, I think a lot of people look at a homeless shelter and just think, well, it's an emergency shelter, and people come in at night, and they get food, they get a bed, and then they go back out. And we do provide that. That's our emergency shelter. But we also encourage people to join our transitional housing program, where they can live with us up to 2 years, where they can go back, and we partner with universities and colleges, and they can go back and get their GED, they can go back and get a degree. And it's been amazing, because 40% of the people that graduate from our programs now work for us in many capacities. They've gone back and gotten their degree. We have people who are directors, people who are facility managers. You have counselors, case managers. And for me, when I first started working there, I was working alongside of former drug addicts, prostitutes, you know, people who had all kinds of problems. And I didn't know until they shared their testimony with me. And I just thought, wow, what an incredible, amazing program that the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries has.
Well, I noticed one of your programs, substance abuse treatment for incarcerated people who are actually in jail.
That's our Michigan Prison Reentry Initiative. They come from prison, and they're in our transitional housing facility. And again, we provide them with the services and the programs that they need to make them viable taxpaying citizens again.
Marcy, a lot of people are out there listening, probably very intrigued. If I wanted to volunteer for any one of these programs, I mean, I certainly could go to your website and look at those, but what are the steps that an individual could take who really wants to get involved?
One of our main goals is to make it easy. So you can now go to drmm.org, go to the volunteer section, and you can fill out the volunteer application online, and you can sign up for upcoming events online. That's for individuals. If you have groups, you can call me, and I schedule in groups. I've dealt with over 100 volunteers at a time. They painted 3 floors in 6 hours, and they did a fantastic job. So we take groups of all different sizes from all walks of life. I've dealt with companies, mission trips from all over the United States, colleges, schools, universities, high schools, middle schools. You know, we try to provide a range of volunteer opportunities to really reach out to all people of all different ages and all different skill levels and all different interest areas. My email is Marci, M-A-R-C-I, at drmm.org. You can email me, or my phone number is 313-993-4700, extension 4715.
The whole business of in these difficult economic times of getting people who may be looking for jobs themselves, who would typically volunteer for things of this nature, but maybe now I've got to use that time to look for a job or what have you. Have you found, though, that people are still willing to give of their time and efforts, even in these rather constrained times we find ourselves in?
Absolutely. Since I've come to Detroit Rescue Mission, in 2008 we had about an average of 2,000 volunteers. In 2011, we had over 10,000 volunteers come through the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. And I think what it is when people are unemployed, you're stressed, you're depressed, you start searching for a deeper significance in life. Mm-hmm. And I would say you'll find it when you volunteer and touch another person's life. You will. You know, we can't help everyone, but everyone can help someone.
And what a positive note to end on. When we talk about sustainability on this show, we talk a lot about environment and economics, but the work that you're doing sustains communities by sustaining people. So congratulations, all the fine programs, and so good having you on Greening of the Great Lakes. I've been talking with Marcy Fitch, Director of Volunteer Services for the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Marcy, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at MSUtoday.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to a half a million Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
It's a pleasure to welcome Jack DeBoer to MSU Today. Jack is the author of Risk Only Money, Success in Business Without Risking Family, Friends, and Reputation. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
First, tell us, before we talk about Risk Only Money, what does tie you to Michigan State University?
Well, born and raised in Michigan and graduated from Michigan State in 1952. I was a Theta Chi in the business school, and have been involved with the fraternity a lot since then and with the university quite a bit.
And you, refresh people, have been quite the businessman in your life. You founded the Residence Inn and three other extended stay hotels. What's sort of your bio for our listeners?
Well, that's right. You know, we started out in the single-family house business after I got out of the military during the Korean War, and then went from there to apartments, built about 16,000 garden apartments around the country, and then into the lodging business, where we did get lucky, and we built and sold three brands, the Residence Inn brand, the Summerfield brand, and the Candlewood brand, and now we are developing the Value Place brand, business has been pretty good to us.
Well, Jack, who is Risk Only Money for, and what prompted you to write it, especially at the age of 80?
Well, that's a good question. I had absolutely no intention at all of ever writing a book. But as the book points out, I went through some very tough times because of an ego out of control during the apartment days. And although I've never had any bankruptcies or lawsuits or things like that, I went from having 2,500 employees down to one, and then rebuilt it. And so along the way, learned a lot of things. And so I made a commitment after I kind of got my act together that I would talk to young people. And I've literally given hundreds of talks to colleges, universities, high schools, business groups over the last several years, talking about the things I learned, unfortunately, a lot the hard way. And always people said, I'd like to have an outline of your speech, or what do you have, or my father's going through a tough time, or my son's going through a tough time, or I'm going through a tough time. But I never had anything. So I finally got my act together and sat down and said, okay, here's a book that kind of outlines the good and the bad. It's a very honest book. It's not about me. It's about business, and I'm in the book, of course. I was told one time no one would buy it if there wasn't a person involved. So I put the book together, and your question, of course, is what's it for? Well, I think for anybody who has a friend or is in business or is going into business, just learn some lessons that I did the hard way. Learn them the easy way. I think probably a best way to capsule that would be, I had a call from a friend who is retired now but ran three of the largest aircraft companies in his career, He called me up. He said, well, I bought your book, and I read it. And I said, well, Brian, I appreciate that. And he said, you know, I kept thinking as I went through it, I wish I'd have read it 40 years ago. And I said, me too.
Well, Jack, what would you say are the three most important pieces of advice you would share and do share in Risk Only Money?
Well, I think probably the number one is tied to the title. You know, money is the only thing that we have in life that we can risk, lose, get back, and not pay any penalty for it. You can't risk your health and lose it. You can't risk your friends and lose them. You can't and get them back. You can't risk your marriage. You can't risk your health and your reputation. And all of those things you can protect because they have nothing to do with success in business except they are there to support you when you do have the normal ups and downs. So the best lesson of the whole thing is risk only money that you can lose and get back and not pay a big price for.
And how, Jack, do you kind of remind yourself along the way? We're all going to get, you know, intense times in our careers, and how do we make sure we keep you in mind to risk only money?
You know, the selfish part of that is if you will invest in all those other things, then when the hardship of not having or losing or making bad business mistakes and losing money, all these things come back to support you. Your friends will support you because you're honest. Your friends will support you because you treat other people the way you would like to be treated. Your creditors will treat you fairly because you told the truth. And so that's the storehouse that you can put together by the kind of person you are, and I think that's the message in the book.
MSU alumnus Jack DeBoer is my guest on MSU Today. He's the author of Risk Only Money, Success in Business Without Risking Family, Friends, and Reputation. And Jack, I wonder if you might expound on an interesting distinction I think you make in the book when you realize that life requires a move from success to significance.
You know, that is the end. I happen to be a believer that, you know, in this country, if you're in business and you work hard and you do things right, you're pretty well assured that you're going to have a successful middle class, that's a bad word, but life. And if you get a whole lot of money, I happen to think that's luck. So the thing I try to point out in the book is no matter where you are, the thing you need to do in order to have fulfillment is share it. And so I talk about in the book that most of the joy that we find now, even though I'm still active in three or four businesses and love to work, the real joy is making a difference for other people. However, I also point out that if you get lucky and make a few bucks and you give it away, you get some joy in that. But the real joy is giving to others. My hero is, you know, the young men and women who are protecting our freedoms. My hero is the woman who takes somebody into her home who is in need. My hero is the person who works two jobs to keep things together and still has time to give of her or his time. My hero is the person who tells his kids, look, we're supporting a child at $30 a month, and this week we don't have money to go to McDonald's. We have a church pledge. That's my hero, and that's the point of significance, because you get back a lot more.
Well, Jack, tell me a little bit more about World Vision.
World Vision was created during the Korean War and is today the largest humanitarian, non-government humanitarian organization on Earth. The $2.6 billion annual budget, tens of thousands of employees working in hundreds of countries around the world, and the $2.6 billion budget with no endowment. All that money is raised every year from the beginning of November through October. And World Vision attracted us. After we made our trip around the world in 1988 and found out really what's going on in the world and the lack of hope, and so we've been very involved. And all the proceeds from this book go to World Vision, primarily to Burma, where our family foundation has been involved now for 22 years. And So World Vision is very near and dear to our hearts. You know, another thing about World Vision, if you think about it, this is a huge international organization, and in all the countries they're involved in and all the things that they do, I always tell the people who run it, and they're all my friends, I say, you know, the best thing about being involved with World Vision is it's absolute proof there's a God, because if there wasn't a God, you guys, as good as you are, could not run this organization. So, I mean, it's an amazing organization.
And World Vision is online for those interested. World Vision, all one word, worldvision.org. And Jack DeBoer is my guest. He's the author of Risk Only Money. And Jack, where would you say you've seen the principles in your book apply most clearly to your own life?
Well, you know, the book starts out spending a couple of days in bed with the covers over my head, just wondering what I was going to do with 2,500 employees and real problems all across the country. And the things that I finally realized that I had not risked, you know, I hadn't done anything illegal, I hadn't lied to people, I still had a good, strong family, I still had friends, and my problems were all money. And so I got up and said, I can handle that because these other things are much more important. So 5 long years, I dug out of the hole. So that's the genesis of the book.
And Jack, you, I guess I'd like to ask you as we close, sort of, what's the main thing, again, you hope that people take from the book? And you mentioned you talk to a lot of college students. Is the advice different when someone's 21 as opposed to 31 or 41?
You know, interestingly enough, I don't think so. It's amazing. You know, I've talked to a lot of groups, particularly now that this book is out. I have given a lot of talks, and the audience is very broad. And so, no, the book is well received in all age groups. However, if young people are thinking about going into business, it's an easy read. Learn some of these things that I learned the hard way, and apply them, and your life will be a lot easier. And I've gotten, you know, lots. The book is selling very well, by the way, and I've gotten lots of notes and comments from people who say, "Gee, you know, I get it. I get it."
Jack DeBoer is the author of Risk Only Money, Success in Business Without Risking Family, Friends, and Reputation. The book is available online, riskonlymoney.com. That's all one word, riskonlymoney.com. And Jack, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. And I will say that the hotel department of Michigan State now has 750 books that are being distributed to their students. And those books were provided by the Theta Chi fraternity at Michigan State.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.